I'm Alastair Campbell from The Rest Is Politics.
Nish Kumar here from Pod Save the UK.
And Christiana Figueres from Outrage and Optimism.
Rising inequality, conflict, climate disaster, it's very hard to find reasons to be hopeful about the future.
That's why we're teaming up this September during the 80th General Assembly of the United Nations.
Along with Political Currency, Pod Save the World, The Week Junior, and more.
We'll discuss the stories that give us hope and answer the question, how does hope turn into action?
Look out for the Be Hope Takeover this September.
Hey, Michael Steele podcast listeners, Michael Steele here with another quick take from the Michael Steele podcast. Check out what's going on right now.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Michael Steele podcast. I told you it's going to be an enjoyable conversation with Andy Borowitz, New York Times bestselling author and a comedian who has written a very, very good book. One of the things I said, Andy, about this period that we're in is that the political scientists, the psychologists, and the psychiatrists are the ones who are going to have to write the story and help us understand it. Also, the comedians are going to have to write the story, and you have in your book Profiles in Ignorance. Before we went to the break, we were talking about at least two of the three stages of ignorance, and we talked a little bit about ridicule. We were talking about acceptance. Tell us about celebration.
Okay, so just to recap for those who are with short attention spans, which
yes,
I know,
which I'm one too.
Exactly. So ridicule was dumb politicians pretending to be smart. Acceptance was dumb politicians being proud of being dumb and embracing their ignorance. Now we're in celebration, which is the phase we're in now, and we've gone completely through the looking glass. And in celebration, smart politicians have to pretend to be dumb. Now, when I use the word smart and dumb, just let me be a little specific because we have to define our terms. By smart, I mean well-informed politicians right. Who learn things, know things, have a certain
all those politicians who went to Harvard and Yale.
We have a lot of them. We have a lot of them, although you would not know it.
Who sound dumb as a bag of bricks.
Exactly. And when I say dumb, I mean ignorant. They right. don't know things. So we now have this weird spectacle, and it was very much, I think, typified by Donald Trump, although I think it was starting certainly before the advent of Trump. There's a moment in the book where I talk about the 2012 CPAC conference, mm-hmm. the Conservative Political Action Committee. And it was memorable for a couple of things. One is Mitt Romney, who was running for president that year, came out and said two very unconvincing things. One, he said that he was, in his words, severely conservative. Now, I mean, when you say severely conservative, that suggests that you're trying a little too hard. Because
just a bit.
A little bit, because most conservatives don't think being conservative is a severe thing. I think it's like, that's a good thing to be. So he said he was severely conservative, but then the other thing he said, and I'm just sort of paraphrasing, he was talking about all the young activists in the audience. And he said, they know people like Hegel and Burke and people like that who they were. And when I was their age, you could have fooled me if I didn't think that they were, infielders for the Detroit Tigers. Now, okay, let's just stop for a second here. Mitt Romney is one of our best educated, smartest politicians in recent memory. He was yes. valedictorian of his class. He had a combined JD MBA, I think, from Harvard.
That's correct.
He is not some rube. Okay. He was trying to act rubish. And I think it was a really interesting and kind of ominous development, because here was a guy who was super smart, and he was now positioning himself as sort of like somebody who just, fell off a turnip truck or something. Mm-hmm. And I think this was in a way a prophetic moment, because he was suggesting this was the direction we were going to go in, where smart guys like him were going to now have to pretend to be dumb in order to be relatable and electable. Now, what happened with Donald Trump, who is really the undisputed icon of the celebration phase, he really positioned himself as a guy who was not an expert, mm-hmm. but he said he knew more than any of the experts. As I said, he knew more than the generals. He said he knew more about renewables than anybody. He reeled off all this, these claims about how brilliant he was, but he had actually no credentials and no information. The only credentials he had really pertained to his quote unquote success as a real estate developer. And as he was presented on The Apprentice, which was a brilliant piece of TV myth-making, he did seem all-knowing. He seemed like, you know, the Obi-Wan Kenobi of capitalism. He was sitting in that high back chair and he was just sort of shooting from the hip and saying, you're fired and that's bad and all of this. So it was almost like a magic eight ball. You know, he just was like shooting out these decisions, but there didn't seem to be any kind of deliberative process or any kind of knowledge behind it. It was just pure unadulterated arrogance. Now, Donald Trump and some of his acolytes like Lauren Boebert and Marjorie Taylor Greene, I must say they come by their ignorance very honestly.
Yes.
Genuinely uninformed people. But there's this whole other crew that you alluded to who are the true, I would say, the true icons or examples of the celebration phase, who are supremely well-educated, usually from Ivy League colleges or universities, but are pretending to be as dumb as Donald Trump. Case in point, Harvard and Yale graduate Ron DeSantis.
Yes.
Now, Ron DeSantis, you would not know it to hear him talk when he says Florida is the place where woke came to die or whatever that nonsense was. He's trying very hard to be populist and to sound uninformed. But he's an extremely well-informed guy, so well-informed, in fact, that when it came to the coronavirus pandemic, he did two things that show both how smart he is and also how dumb he pretends to be. He's very smart in that he actually is a big believer in statistics because as governor of Florida, he did a lot to suppress the statistics when they didn't make Florida look very good.
Yeah.
So in terms of vaccination, he got vaccinated. He made sure that his kids got vaccinated. He wasn't saying vaccinations are bad, but he appointed as the Surgeon General of Florida a sort of quote unquote doctor. He actually is a real doctor who was suggesting that we all take horse medicine, ivermectin, mm-hmm. to cure our coronavirus. So he's a guy who in his own life is smart, well-informed, but in terms of his public-facing self, he's trying to present this populist, uninformed version of himself. So uninformed and so recklessly uninformed that he was actually banned from YouTube for spreading vaccination misinformation. Now, I don't know if you've been on YouTube lately, but if you look at what's still on YouTube,
yeah, right.
It's hard to imagine what you have to say to get banned from YouTube. Right. So he's an example of this. Josh Hawley, another example, Yale Law School grad, who wouldn't certify the Electoral College votes when it came time to do that in the Senate. Now, Josh Hawley knows that there was no fraud. He's a smart guy. He is an election denial. The public facing self of him is, but when it came to like, you know, taking a test at Harvard Law School, I'm pretty sure that Josh Hawley would have given the correct answer when it came to whether or not the electoral system had been somehow violated mysteriously. So he's another one, you know, Matt Gaetz went to William & Mary. You can just go down the list of these. Ted Cruz, of course. graduate. So I don't mean to sound, I actually did go to an Ivy League school. So what I'm sounding like is an elitist who's equating Ivy League education with knowledge, which is not the case. There's tons of stuff I don't know. And I certainly went to school with a lot of people who didn't know very much. But the fact of the matter is, these people are all hiding the fact that they're educated. They're working overtime to sound uninformed. And that's what the celebration phase is about. It's at a point where we are elevating stupidity and ignorance over expertise. And that's not a society's recipe for success.
So these individuals in the celebration phase, the Josh Hawleys, who, you know, with the raised fist, but then we see the clip of him running like a, you know, little scared teenage girl.
The same Bolt of the U.S. Senate. I know.
Right, the same Bolt of the U.S. Senate. What's their end game here? How are they capitalizing, or how do they intend to capitalize on this ignorance?
Well, in the case of Ron DeSantis, we don't know the end game yet, but the mid game is pretty good. because he did very well in the midterms, and his populist message, his anti-trans, anti-gay, anti-science message is working up to a point. We'll see how far it gets him. I am very bad at making predictions.
Right.
But I think, one of the problems is, he lacks something that Donald Trump has, which is, I don't think he's talented. I don't think that he has Donald Trump's talent. I think Donald Trump's talent is somewhat degraded right now. If you saw his announcement,
right,
that's like, buying a later album by a band you used to like.
Right.
It's like he's lost his juice somehow. I don't like to be ageist because we're all getting older, but I think in Donald Trump's case, one of the problems is that what he always has had going for him is grievance. His sense of grievance is very authentic. Mm-hmm. The problem is when he started in 2015, his grievance, he found a way to transmute it into something that was relatable. He turned it into anger at immigration,
right,
and anger at Mexicans. And so he was able to turn it into a nationalist, racist message. When your message of grievance is simply, I was denied election to president of the United States, that's something many fewer people can relate to. How many people really feel that they were denied election to the presidency? So he's lost a step, but I don't think that Ron DeSantis has much of a step. I don't think that he is telegenic. I think in this age where performance is so important, I don't think he has it. So it's going to be interesting to see whether his projection of stupidity is going to be enough to make that, to get him to the promised land. I have some doubts. I could be wrong, but
I actually kind of agree with you on that. And I've heard that from a number of people inside and outside of Florida that, he's pretty much, landlocked to Florida. He's not necessarily going to translate nationally the way other figures that we've discussed have, like Reagan and Trump. And certainly, as we've seen some of the other figures, whether for good or bad, Ted Cruz, Sarah Palin, translate across the country, outside of Alaska, outside of Texas. He really is kind of landlocked into the Florida environment.
Hey, everybody. Thanks so much for listening today. Please go to Apple Podcasts and give us a 5-star review. Heck, give us 2 5-star reviews. I love it. Or catch us on Stitcher, iHeart, TuneIn, or wherever you get that podcast thing on. You know how that goes. Peace out.
Retaliation with Julie Roginski is a weekly podcast focused on the stories of women who have spoken truth to power and have persevered despite the costs. It shares the experiences of courageous people who have sometimes been celebrated, but too often castigated for standing up for themselves and for others. Each week, I examine the structures, systems, and culprits responsible for perpetuating and promoting workplace toxicity. You'll hear stories from female celebrities, music label executives, politicians, police officers, and many others as we examine the cultural reevaluations, policy changes, and legal steps that can finally bring an end to the ongoing attack on women in this country and around the world. Listen on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Alastair Campbell from The Rest Is Politics.
Nish Kumar here from Pod Save the UK.
And Christiana Figueres from Outrage and Optimism.
Rising inequality, conflict, climate disaster, it's very hard to find reasons to be hopeful about the future.
That's why we're teaming up this September during the 80th General Assembly of the United Nations.
Along with Political Currency, Pod Save the World, The Week Junior, and more.
We'll discuss the stories that give us hope and answer the question, how does hope turn into action?
Look out for the Be Hope Takeover this September.